They came suddenly, as they often do, men with ski masks and a black van, and they took you to Scorpio Island. And there, the man with the crazy look in his eye. He's telling you about his plans. His somewhat grandiose plans. And you? Your job is suddenly to write a protein folding application. But not just any protein folding application. No, no. Rather, this application needs to distribute the problem to millions of users via the web. Imagine, it's folding at home, but on the web. The old man goes on for a little while longer. Something about, they'll have to meet his demands. But you think about it. Sure, you're in the middle of nowhere. But hey, the medical benefits on Scorpio Island? They're better than at your last job. Hi, I'm Monica Mork.
And I'm Eric Mork.
We're Silverlight consultants and web enthusiasts. Welcome to the Sparkling Client podcast, recorded February 16th, 2008. Sparkling Client is a podcast about Silverlight and other web client technologies. It's meant for developers and designers who are interested in making the next generation of great-looking web applications. This week, we're talking about Silverlight 1.1, which has been renamed to Silverlight 2. Here's how it works. You give us 15 minutes of your time, and we give you the tools to build amazing web clients. For more information and show notes, see sparklingclient.com. Also, please consider leaving us feedback at the site. We're always looking for ways to make the show better. Warning, we're talking about software that is under development. What we talk about now is based on what we think is likely to emerge from Microsoft over the next 6 months. This podcast is brought to you by the consulting company that Eric founded, Silver Bay Labs. If you have need of professional services for Silverlight, ASP.NET Ajax, or others, please send us an email at eric@silverbaylabs.org. Each week, we cover a specific set of questions. This week, we'll be asking, why would someone use Silverlight? And how does one get started with Silverlight? Let's get started. Eric, how would our hypothetical programmer on Scorpio Island solve the problem?
Well, that's the trick. You basically can't right now. Basically. Now, here's the thing, and one of the reasons we're so excited about Silverlight. It gives us an opportunity to solve these type of problems. So, not many people think about Silverlight in terms of distributed computing, but I think it's a very interesting idea, and I think that's part of what it's going to be doing. So, you walk up to a website, you navigate on that website, and you click a button to start processing. Processing happens on your machine, the client machine, right next to you. Your dual-core multi-gigahertz machine all of a sudden is doing real processing with basically native code and shipping information up to the server. And I think that's a pretty exciting thing.
So what's the takeaway message for today's show?
Well, it's a few things. First of all, we want to give an overview of what Silverlight does. It's a runtime that's downloaded. It's very easy to install. Lets us do complicated stuff on the client. And sometimes might even be appropriate to use for distributed computing problems. Now, it's not available yet. That's another point to mention. The 1.0 version is out and released, but it's not going to be for everyone.
So why would someone use Silverlight? What does it do?
Well, there are a lot of good things about Silverlight, but the thing that I think is the most amazing is that it allows us to run managed code on the client, right? So whether that client is a Macintosh, or whether that client is a Linux machine, or whether it's a PC machine, we can run C# or VB or F# or what have you on those client machines. And when we do that, we get this full suite of tools that we're used to using on the server or for desktop applications on the PC. So this includes things like multiple languages, right? So we're talking about that. So Iron Python, Iron Ruby, all these different languages we're going to be able to use. In addition, we get things like garbage collection, right? So we, in the managed code land, we don't have to chase down memory leaks anymore. I mean, that's an oversimplification. You can hold on to references, etc. But in general, the situation is much improved over the C++ days. Another thing we're going to get is just-in-time compile support. So for those of us who've been living in the managed world, That's a very nice feature. It gives us sort of the best of both worlds. We're able to create this these applications that target a runtime and get some benefits there, like multiple language support, being able to write classes that are consumed by different languages, and all these benefits we get from the runtime. But we also get the benefit of having very quick execution times, because all the code is pre-compiled into whatever your underlying processor type is. So we'll get that support. So even across on Macintosh and Linux machines. We get managed exception handling again. So our exceptions, you know, compared to the old C++ days, this is a big benefit. Our exceptions get to cross the boundaries between different languages, and you know, there are all kinds of benefits in there. We get IDE debugging. So even if you have a bug on a Macintosh system with Silverlight, which in theory shouldn't happen because Silverlight works the same way on different OSs, but if you came up with a specific problem on Macintosh, there's a lightweight debugging system you can use to debug the system on Macintosh. So it's a remote debugging situation. It's pretty interesting. You get to use generics, right? So these advances to the .NET runtime, we're going to be able to use. So generics and nullable types and the whole range of those. And this includes things like link. So link is a new thing in the .NET world. It allows us to basically write SQL statements in code so that they're compile time checked and type checked in code, which is pretty amazing. Now, it's more complicated than that, and it turns out these statements can also be used on XML. So sort of think select where sort of statements on XML. We get to use those also in link. And you can also do link against objects. And that's a whole nother show, and we don't want to go there today. But the point is, you get all these great tools, and you get them on the client.
So people have all these nice language constructs on the client, but can they actually do anything on the client? What APIs do you have access to?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. And you're pointing out that if we're in a sandbox on the client, which we're going to have to be for security and other reasons, how much are we able to do? And so I think quite a bit. We get a chunk of the base class library in Silverlight. So whether on Macintosh or Linux or whatever, you're going to have a subset of the base class library functionality. So you're going to have some types in namespaces like system.io, right? So you can do some input and output. You're going to have system.reflection. So if you want to reflect upon your types, that's also going to be a huge thing. System.text, system.text.regularExpressions. So your regular expression support. Now think here how you might use that on the client, right? Validation is something that certainly comes to mind. And then system.xml. Now, the story is complicated. You don't have access to all the XML types, but we do have access to XML Reader and XML Writer. So these very fast, nice, widely used types are going to be available down on the client. There's also some newer functionality, as you might expect, since this is going to be a fundamentally different environment to operate in. So there's some types for browser DOM interaction. So if you want to reach out and manipulate regular HTML DOM elements, you're going to have the ability to do that, as well as XAML elements, which we'll talk in a bit in a while. And so we can do AJAX sorts of things with Silverlight. So if there's text in a text field, in an HTML text field, we can read that information in Silverlight, and we can, you know, manipulate the DOM and do whatever we have to do. So it's kind of like this can be a plugin of sorts, a plugin replacement for AJAX, if you need it to be so, and lets us write these very complicated type-safe applications on the client. So I think that's pretty exciting. And then there's this whole other story of network connectivity. So my understanding is that ultimately Silverlight relies on the XML HTTP request object, though I'm not sure what's going to be in the future, and maybe they'll also use some iframe support or something. But the point is, we're going to have this great network connectivity. So you want to call JSON Web Services? no problem in Silverlight. So maybe you're using some JSON Web Services today with an ASP.NET Ajax or another Ajax application. Great. You can reuse those web services with Silverlight. Silverlight will also speak WS Star, so we're going to be able to talk to WCF web services. And we're going to be able to do all these other things like REST and plain old XML, POX, and RSS, and ATOM. So it's a very friendly player in the HTML space in that we get to speak all these sort of languages that are going to allow us to communicate on the net very well and consume these services that are out there also.
That's great. Will Silverlight be a part of Microsoft's push for application services?
Right, yeah, and it will be. So if today you're using application services, now these are things like authentication and role and those sorts of things. If you're using those today in an ASP.NET application, you can reuse those services in a Silverlight application. So on the Silverlight client, you can basically make calls to see whether a user is authenticated to do X or Y or whatever, and then also to get role information, etc. So there's this push by Microsoft to have application services consumable from different venues. So application services are traditionally thought of as being in ASP.NET, but they're also in ASP.NET Ajax has some JavaScript functionality for calling these services. And then also desktop applications also have the support too. And Silverlight's going to fit right into that puzzle piece.
So what is Silverlight's display model?
That's an interesting story. Silverlight uses this stuff called XAML. Now, if you've done any WPF development, you've also used XAML, though it's a slightly different flavor. But the idea is the same. You take this XAML, which is an XML file. You send it to the client, and the Silverlight control renders, using its vector graphics engine, whatever it finds in that XAML file. So you can specify that you want elements like circles or rectangles or whatever, and coming up in Silverlight 2, we're going to have input controls, etc. You can say where you want those items, and you can say what sort of animations you want. And if you're a design sort of person, you can use these Microsoft tools like Expression Blend to actually do this design with XAML and make nice and shiny objects. But then, and I'll just go aside real quickly here, you can also have this nice separation of concerns where you have developers working on the code, they're working on the underlying code and maybe the business logic, etc. And then you have the designers over on the design side drawing the nice shiny controls to interact with your application.
How does Silverlight exist with JavaScript? Are they compatible?
They are very compatible. This was must have been a design concern from the get-go with Silverlight. So there's this very cool thing you can do. You can mark your methods. So like in C#, you add this attribute on your methods, and you can add an attribute to your properties, etc. And those attributions allow JavaScript to call directly in. So from JavaScript, you just call right into the .NET types, and that's very, very cool. It turns out that .NET can also call out to JavaScript, which is also incredibly useful. So there's no real barrier between them. I mean, you can call into, you can call out of JavaScript, and it's all very easy. There are also these other levels of interoperability. So JavaScript can manipulate the XAML. So on the client, like we were talking about, you have these XML files, these XAML files that specify what to render. Right now, since they're XML, they sort of look like this miniature DOM, this small version of the DOM. JavaScript can manipulate the regular DOM, but then it can also reach into this small DOM and manipulate elements there. And so it's a very friendly player with JavaScript. And also it's complementary to ASP.NET Ajax by extension, because it's very easy for those libraries and code written to ASP.NET Ajax to call into Silverlight.
What's the architecture of Silverlight? How do all these pieces fit together?
Here's how it works. The key is really the runtime. Now, this runtime is easily installed. They went to great pains to make the installer for this runtime very, very easy to use. So there's no MSI, there's no spin up on the client machine. What happens is You walk up to a Silverlight site, and if you don't have Silverlight installed, you see a medallion on the site giving you the option to install Silverlight. You click on it, it downloads, and then it installs very, very quickly. So there are a couple of parts to this. Number one, the runtime is very small. We don't know how small, but it's expected to be announced at MIX, and we're thinking that it's, you know, in the 3 to 4 megabyte range, so pretty small. But then also the install is very, very fast, just a couple of seconds to do that install. Now, since the key is the runtime, that is kind of interesting because it means that no server is necessary. So you could host a Silverlight application out of a folder or on Apache or in a PHP application or whatever. There's no dependence on ASP.NET or anything like that. So I think that's also pretty exciting because it's also a good player in the web space. Now, it is true that there are some pieces of Silverlight that are going to work better in a Microsoft / ASP.NET AJAX situation. There are ASP.NET controls that instantiate Silverlight, etc. And those are useful and handy to have. If you're in the ASP.NET space, it's going to be very easy to use Silverlight. Now, on the client side, there are a few critical pieces to enable Silverlight. The first thing that you have to have is that you have to have the part that instantiates Silverlight. So most times right now, that's going to be JavaScript. Microsoft has this JavaScript file. You include it. You have a call into this JavaScript file that instantiates your Silverlight control across different browsers. And so that's pretty easy. You just have to have the JavaScript. You need to have a DLL that contains the code, right? So that specifies how your application is going to execute. And that code is wrapped up in a DLL. You had that on your web server. You don't have to have any fancy hosting for it. It just has to be available. And then the last piece you have to have is that you have to have a XAML file, that XML file we were talking about. It has the presentation information, and then it also specifies handlers for events. So you could say, on the loading of this application, I want this specific code to handle the events.
Now, you touched on this earlier, but what's the story with all the Silverlight versions?
Yeah, I'm sorry to belabor the point. The problem is there are a lot of versions, some real, some not, and it's a confusing story. Here's the thing. 1.0 was shipped. Okay, now it doesn't have the advanced exciting features like CLR support, the common language runtime. It doesn't have .NET code on the client. It's great for doing things like rendering media. If you have some assets in Windows Media and you'd like to put them up on the web, that's probably the sweet spot for 1.0. It has some JavaScript compatibility, but it's not going to be for most people.
So when can we expect Silverlight 2 to be released?
Soon is the short answer. So a go live version is expected pretty quickly. We're overdue for a beta. The last betas, they were actually labeled 1.1, confusingly, are like 9 to 10 months old. We're expecting a new beta soon, and perhaps that'll be a go live or a go live soon after. So Q1, Q2, followed by the full release version this summer.
In the meantime, how can our listeners get started with Silverlight 2?
Well, that's a toughie. So this show is current as of February 2008. But here's the deal. Things are going to be changing rapidly over the next couple of months. So if you're listening to this show after February, you probably want to hit the Silverlight.net site and see what's up there. Or also the Sparkling Client site, because we're going to have shows detailing Silverlight 2 as it rolls out. Silverlight 2, as I've said, isn't publicly available. And in fact, the 1.1 betas are really old. They're 9 to 10 months old. So your best bet, if you're interested, go to the silverlight.net site. There are some how-to videos for Silverlight. And you can either see our show notes page or you can go to shrinkster.com/UJF to get some information. There aren't really any books for Silverlight 2. There's some books for Silverlight 1, but they're maybe not going to be very applicable for Silverlight 2. So you probably want to hold off on books for a while. In terms of blogs, I would really recommend Scott Guthrie's blog. He is the general manager with the Microsoft Developer Division. He's a really smart person, and he also has, he has control over domains like IIS and ASP.NET, but he also gets the, he has the honor of releasing a lot of cool information on his blog. So if you go to weblogs.asp.net/scottgoo, that's S-C-O-T-T-G-U, or we have the Shrinkster version at shrinkster.com/UJH, you'll be able to see the new information as it's being rolled out. In addition, there is on the Channel 9 site a list of blogs, and we've put that at shrinkster.com/UJE, and so you can see a list of Silverlight blogs, and I think that would be useful also.
Thanks, Eric. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for listening to the Sparkling Client Podcast.